Click kaya959.co.za to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
It's a taxing time for South Africa and US President Donald Trump's relations. He slapped 30% tariffs on our exports, and his administration has amplified claims of a white genocide and illegal land seizures, despite evidence to the contrary. So, let's speak to Kaya Sithole, who's a chartered accountant, activist, and academic. Kaya, thanks so much for your time on Kaya Biz. What's the latest with the Africa-US relations?
Oh, good evening to the listeners. It is an ongoing disaster. And what makes it an ongoing disaster is that really South Africa has been under intense scrutiny and under siege by the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. What seems to be their instruments of execution are obviously issues around economic instruments like tariffs, but we do know that there's more to the story than just the simple question of trade deficits and trade surpluses. And it does really seem that South Africa's relations are indeed at an all-time low, and these very punitive tariffs that keep getting screamed at us.
Mm-hmm. Before we go into the tariffs, how would you describe the general current approach to trade by the US and its president, not just to South Africa?
Well, I think the problem that we have with the Trump administration is that Donald Trump has a very different interpretation of how trade patterns with various global partners are meant to be and what needs to be done in order to correct those that he sees as probably not in the right balance. So what he has done is that he simply said that every country that maintains a trade surplus with the United States is essentially cheating the United States, so therefore he wants to be able to fix that through a tariff regime. So he's done that to all countries at large, but we obviously know that in the South African context, there's more than just the economics question. There's also the question on our geopolitical differences that he completely disagrees with.
Mm-hmm. You've described that approach as a disaster, but we also see that, you know, other African states are engaging with the U.S. president, including Liberia today or in the last 2 days. How should African states think about how to position themselves when it comes to engaging with the United States, especially since that stance of theirs of protectionism has reemerged with the re-election of Trump?
Well, the tragedy of African states is that when Trump came back into power, they didn't have a meeting of the minds on how to approach the new Trump administration. So what we've ended up with is every single country being attacked on different issues, and every mm-hmm. single country trying to formulate its own solution. So there is no coordinated approach that says that, look, as a collective, this is what we think the issues are, and is how we can reach a meeting of the minds. So it's always been a matter of, well, whenever a country feels that Trump is trying to say something or do something to that country has to go and lobby on its own. I think Lesotho and South Africa have probably borne the brunt of this. And until the South African countries at large come up with the strategic approach to dealing with the Trump phenomenon, it's going to be as chaotic as we've seen.
How do you mitigate that chaos as a country and as a continent?
I think we do probably need to find a way of getting some African leaders to really get down and figure out what it is that they should position as the African approach towards the Trump administration. The reality is that the Trump administration is quite, chaotic in nature. There aren't really principles that underpin some of its decisions. So it's difficult to work with an administration that isn't centered on core principles. But that being said, what these countries need to be able to do is to find out what the spectrum of possibilities are. And obviously, every country has got a different, exposure to the American consumer market and maybe to some of the American, trade deals that they already have. So if you're going to come up with the formula that sort of suits everyone else, you need everyone to sort of put together their canvas of explaining where they are in relation to this relationship, what they would like to achieve, and then to be able to see what the convergence points are. And if there's enough convergence points, then you go and work as a lobby group. And obviously, there are going to be instances where the differences are irreconcilable. But until now, no one has simply done that process of saying, where are we in relation to what this relationship is supposed to be for the next 4 years?
Hmm. If you're working in an environment and with a country leader who appears erratic in some of the decisions he makes and inconsistent in terms of even dates for the tariffs and the freezes and what's going to happen, with this moniker being coined of TACO, Trump always chickens out. How feasible is it to have a consistent plan? Because even that consistency may get derailed a little bit later on.
Look, I think the reality is that everyone has acknowledged the fact that Trump is the erratic one. So all you can do is simply not try to be as erratic as he is, because that simply doesn't get you anywhere. But what is going to eventually prevail is that through all his hysteria and through all his chaotic decisions, there's always going to be a question behind the scenes where the bureaucrats are involved of, well, what is the long-term game plan and what is the long-term a trade policy of the United States, and how does it partner with other countries? So what we're seeing is that at the forefront, that's where the chaos is, because Figurehead is a chaotic individual. But I think ultimately, even those that are responsible for managing the actual trade and economic patterns are going to have to work, and those that they want to trade with to know what the rules are in spite of what the hysteria that comes from the Oval Office is. The problem so far is that it seems that it is the hysteria that determines the agenda. So as soon as he makes a pronouncement, then everybody behind the scenes tries to tailor the way they do things in order to meet what that pronouncement has been, only to find that there's a new pronouncement coming up. So I think eventually there's going to be a process that says that, look, we're going to find a way of working with all of these partners behind the scenes, regardless of what the president says, because his pronouncements cannot be the basis for decision making long term.
Kaya, when it comes to the actions of the U.S. president in the United States and beyond, when it comes to institutions, there is often a sense that in the new American way of doing things, institutions are sometimes either gutted, like FEMA, or a lot of their federal departments have been gutted. Institutions like Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, who does work across the world, have had funding withdrawn. We know in South Africa as well, a lot of the HIV/AIDS programs have been cut by the U.S. government. And there's going to be a vacuum there. On the one hand, there's a gung-ho approach by people saying, yeah, you know, it's Africa's time to just stand on its own. But it's not simple. It's not simple to go from having had tens to hundreds of million dollars worth of funding to none. And that scramble in between is going to have very real life ramifications for people who depend on that those services. Is this a time where our partners and allies like China come in and fill the gaps? Or is this a time for that long spoken about African solutions for Africa to kick in? And practically, how long does that take, if it's even possible?
Well, the origins of the problem that you mentioned is indeed the higher levels of dependency that those institutions and those agencies have had on the benevolence of the United States. Now, obviously, that benevolence of the United States was actually a political tool of the United States government, where they felt that if they are able to sort of buy their way into onto the good side of all these countries they refer to as a soft power, then it puts them in a good position as the United States to really drive their international agenda. That is no longer the case. And what has happened is that because it had been in place for such a long time, any of these agencies assumed it was going to be a permanent state of affairs. So when Donald Trump then said, well, actually, I'm not beholden to these arrangements, I do not have to spend U.S. money on honoring these arrangements, it then turned out that very few of these institutions had that alternative. The idea of then finding a partner like China to replace the United States, well, simply means that you're shifting your dependency from one country to the other. So the solution is to be able to find a way of being a bit more autonomous, in the sense that you are able to fund the baseline of all your activities, so that if there is a change in the policy direction or even the policy orientation of some fellow partners, you're not left dry, which has been the case with the United States dependent. So this is indeed the time where these agencies and these countries figure out a model that is really immune to the political headwinds of other countries.
What about institutions like the African Development Bank, maybe the IFC, development institutions, bodies like the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, Secretariat? Is it a time to step up? How would they even step up?
Well, it's been a time for ever since they were formulated. The problem with all of these institutions is because all of the countries that are supposed to be pushing for them to be ready to deliver on whatever their agenda is, all of those countries have been able to piggyback on other international structures and other international partners. So perhaps the sense of urgency that should have been there is not really what we're seeing. So if you look at the African Free Continental Trade Agreement, I mean, you could say the conversation started in 1963, or you could say the conversation started in 2018. Either way, the sense of urgency that should have been there to ensure that African countries trade with each other far more robustly, it still just simply hasn't happened. So now when you see a tariff regime in the United States, all of these countries are scrambling to find out what the alternative markets are going to be. You can see there's a market in your continent, but you do not know how to access it because no one has invested in the infrastructure. So we really are paying the price for the sense of leadership paralysis that we've seen in all of these institutions that should have been addressing African problems.
All right, we're going to see what happens with, you know, the new presidents of the AFDB and the leadership, continued leadership of Wamkele Mene, and see if there's any changes there. Kaya Sithole, chartered accountant, activist and academic, thank you so much for your time on Kaya Biz this evening. Really good to have you on the show discussing trade policy and so much more. Do stay with us on Kaya Biz. After a short break, we'll be speaking about how to build, grow and keep wealth with Johan Hoos, head of PPS Wealth. Do stay with us.
Click kaya959.co.za to download the Kaya Biz podcast.